Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And I just am still looking forward to this show today because I have been a fan of Ripley's Believe It or Not ever since I was a little girl. And I know I'm sort of an oddball, but I always was intrigued by the uniqueness of life, even when I was a kid. And I never dreamed that I'd have the opportunity to do interviews with people who live Ripley's Believe It or Not every single day. My guest today is Edward Mayer, and we are going to be talking about their new publication, Dare to Look. Hi, Edward. Welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon, Donna. Thank you for having Ripley's back on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Well, it's so much fun. I've always thought that if kids could have access to your book, they would have just a dynamite time at being able to gross people out during conversations. Which I can remember when I was growing up and I was in biology and all this kind of stuff. I'd bring home eyeballs and this type of thing that we would have to work with in class, and people would just turn literally green in front of me. And I can remember saying, oh, this is so cool. Well, Ripley's is just amazing because you go through a lot of this information that is sent to you. You have people that go out and research it, and this has been a very significant part of your life. How in the world did you ever connect with Ripley?
Well, you covered lots of ground there. So I'll comment initially on, science class. I did well in science, but I was always the guy that made someone else do the dissecting. I took the notes. So, I've always been a bookish sort of person, and some of the gooey, gory stuff in our books shocked me at my age, 35 years in with Ripley's Believe It or Not. I started with the company as a library student. I finished my bachelor's, was working on my master's. I took a summer job to catalog the famous Ripley's Believe It or Not newspaper cartoon. And as I said, this goes back 35 years ago now. And I worked very diligently in the summer of 1978, which was sort of the dawn of the computer age. We had one computer in the Ripley office that was about as big as a car, and I was hired to come up with a very simple fundamental computer system that we could catalog our cartoons, library format, to do third-party licensing. Somebody wants to do a cat calendar. We could feed the machine, and it would spit out, the 800 cat cartoons that we might have. So that's how it started. I liked my job well enough that when they offered me a full-time job, I took it, and I've been here ever since. Now, saying that, I've moved countries as well as offices a couple times, but I've never worked anywhere full-time other than Ripley's Believe It or Not. And today, I'm still very involved in the cartoon. One of the editors of our book program, and the new book is called Dare to Look. But my fundamental, most important job is I get to travel around quite a bit in the footsteps of Robert Ripley, buying the exhibits that we put in our museums. And we currently have 32 museums in 10 countries, so it's a full-time job plus.
Absolutely, and you also have aquariums. I mean, there's all kinds of things.
We have two aquariums currently. And
two.
A third.
Okay.
The third one should open in literally any day now. The official date is October 7th. Please don't quote me whether it actually opens on October 7th, but that's what we're all aiming for.
Incredible. I wanted
that's
to share.
In Toronto, Canada.
Oh, it's in Canada. Oh, my goodness. Well, one of the first items in the book, and I wanted to share it because it's about Ripley, there is a bit of information about a gentleman by the name of Wayne Harbor. Now, his lifespan was from 1899 to 1981, and he was a postal worker. I could not believe what I read about this man, that he devoted 29 years of his life disclaiming what Robert Ripley discovered. When he died.
I'm not sure I'd phrase it quite like that. I like to think that he was just having fun, that he really didn't want to prove Ripley wrong. He just was interested in the stuff that Ripley was interested in, possibly, you know, connecting via post predominantly with people that were interested in Ripley's as well. But he wrote letters for 29 years, randomly every day, picking one of the items from the newspaper cartoon. And during the week, the cartoon Monday to Saturday would have three or four items. Sunday would have five or six. So, you know, out of the three or four, he'd, you know, blindfold his eyes, whatever, and say, I'm going to write to this person. Very, very random. No science to it. And he would write a letter saying, you know, dear sir, I see in yesterday's Ripley's Believe It or Not cartoon that you have a two-headed cat. Can you please verify this is true? And, you know, if possible, send me a photo. And he never once in 29 years and thousands of letters, received a negative response. Now, I got to be honest, he didn't get responses to everything, but he never got a negative response. No one ever said, no, Robert Ripley's telling the story. It's a lie. Don't believe it. Every single answer he got said, yep, that's true. And when he died in 1981, I actually spoke at his funeral, but
oh,
his widow donated all of those letters to our archives, and many of our museums have a display on Wayne Harbor. Fascinating story, and some of the mail he got back and sent as well, just fascinating that, you know, if he didn't have an address, sometimes he literally just cut out the cartoon and pasted it to the envelope, you know, and says something like, you know, in care of the Better Business Bureau or, you know, something like that, hoping that somebody else would forward it to the party in question. And, you know, fascinating answers. You know, people just, social media long before anybody was using that term.
I love the variety. This, to me, is so much fun. And just like I mentioned a moment ago, when I was a kid, I really liked to gross people out. And I'm sure there's many of my listeners that would say, do I want to admit to that? You know, girls are never supposed to admit that this
right.
is what they do. Usually the boys are really known for that. But the thing is, there is a boy, and this is on page 230 in your book, and it was titled, this caption is titled, Moby Sick. This is an adorable picture of this little boy's face, mischievous look in his eyes, and he's holding up something, and you think, well, what is that? No big deal. It could be a piece of meat. It might be part of a honeycomb. But this is an 8-year-old boy. His name is Charlie Naismith. He discovered a 21-ounce piece of whale vomit. And I went, oh, my goodness, you've got to be kidding. It's worth $60,000 or more. You've got to tell us how this was, one, even determined, and two, did the kid sell it?
Well, the product is indeed whale vomit. I guess there's no polite way to say that, but it is called ambergris, and it looks like, it's got the color of amber, but it looks more like tree sap if I had to compare it to anything. And it's one of the reasons why whaling happened in the 19th century. They were killing this huge big whale for this product that comes from the back of the head in the sperm whale. Other whales may or may not have it, but the sperm whale specifically was hunted because it has a big chunk of it in that big long head that we all envision with Moby Dick. You know, it's a very, very specific shaped head that produced this thing. So for at least 200 years, mankind has been collecting it, saving it, hunting for it, predominantly used in perfumes, ladies' perfumes, typically seen in liquid form, not in the solid form that this picture shows. And I love the picture. As you said, the little kid's got an angelic-looking smile, and the lump of ambergris is as big as his head, so it's a remarkable photo. Yes, he sold it. He kept the teeniest, tiniest piece for himself. I guess he's got it in a frame or a cabinet somewhere, but he helped the family get some money. 21
Amazing.
Ounces of this stuff is, you know, a lot of perfume.
And one of the other stories, and I just love going through different sections in the book, and it's on the same page, and I thought, oh my goodness, if this didn't cause a divorce, I don't know what would. And it's a story about a mentally ill woman in Sichuan, China, who tore up $8,000 in banknotes. Now, that alone would probably cause someone's heart to stop. She's just torn up all of this money. But her husband decided not to get rid of the wife.
The key phrase is in the first line that she's mentally ill. I'm quite sure that this was, not a vengeful act, but, something that the disease had brought on. But, we get married in goodness and in health, and I think he handled it as well as he could. He collected as much of the scraps as he could, and 12 people at the bank spent 6 hours piecing as much of it back together as they could. So he wasn't out the total $8,000, but it must have made him cry when he saw it all laying on the floor.
When you are getting information, and I know that people are submitting all kinds of interesting material to you, how does Ripley's go about determining what they're going to put in their book? You literally have millions of items that have been collected through the years, that have been documented. My goodness, how do you keep track of all this stuff?
Well, the book we're talking about, Dare to Look, is our 10th annual in this format, and it's a coffee table oversized book, 256 pages, 9 by 12. Each one of these 10 annuals has roughly 2,500 stories and 500 photos. So, it's maybe not quite millions, but it adds up over time. We've been at this since 1918. We have a database that has about 150,000 Ripley's, believe it or not, facts on it. So it's something that we catalog as librarians and archivists. We keep track of everything we publish. And, we've got a team of researchers both in Orlando, Florida, and London, England, that they spend their whole day looking for stories, wherever stories can be found, whether it's on the Internet or magazines or news shows or interviewing people live. I personally, try as often as can be to meet the people that actually make the things that we put in our exhibits. The characters are sometimes more interesting than the final product. So it's an endless search, but I don't think we'll ever run out of material. Fashion and trends change, so what may be amazing yesterday might not be amazing tomorrow, but something else will take its place. I don't think we're ever going to run out of product.
There is, on page 29, something that I was just reviewing material on in the past week for information to share with my listeners, and it has to do with printers that are able to replicate things. And I chuckle when I read about it because I think of the program Star Trek where they walk over to a hole in the wall and say, I want a piece of chocolate cake. Bing! It's replicated and you have your chocolate cake. It's a fascinating concept, and today we're seeing this actually happening, but this is about model babies. And the young man that is pictured here shows the computer screen and also the reproduced image of a fetus. This is a 3D printer that transforms an ultrasound scan. This is phenomenal. not just
it almost sounds like Star Trek science, doesn't it? It's
yes,
just
well,
amazing.
It really is. Yeah, it really is.
I have two children, both in their late 20s, and the picture, the ultrasound pictures I have of my children, you truly cannot see anything. The doctor tells you it's a girl, you believe them. Obviously, we've gone a long way since then, but this is, again, the next step. I have not yet seen a 3D printer. I got to, admit that up front, but I'm fascinated by them. And, my very first thought the first time I saw it on 60 Minutes was, well, this is going to revolutionize the medical industry. And I think that's the, the real key here. This is going to help save people's lives. In this case, they not only have a great ultrasound picture, I mean, as clear as a bell,
mm-hmm.
but they can scan it and produce a 3D image. So the proud father walks away with something that is exactly what his baby looked like on the day it was put in the printer.
Incredible. And
it's amazing science. And
it really
the cost
is,
apparently is $1,000 each, which, is more than most people have in their pocket, but... it's not a crazy number, given what it is.
I'm just, that's one of the things I love about Ripley's publication. You have a lot of information about Ripley himself, old photos, various things that in his day, he was able to travel around the world. His world was so different from the world today when it comes to technology.
Absolutely.
And other things, and yet he was able to document so many things, and that's what these photographs show. And here we are also talking about technology of today, and that technology enables Ripley's to put out these phenomenal books. But the information is absolutely amazing, like this photograph of spiders. It's on the next page. It's New South Wales, Australia. This occurred in March 2012, and boy, I thought using this kind of concept in the movie for arachnids would give anybody the willies. I don't think you could go to sleep after seeing this stuff. It was amazing.
I can't imagine waking up the next morning and opening my curtains and finding a field of spider webs, which of course still has some spiders in it, but I'm talking about an area, bigger than a football field that, when I went to bed, was green. When I woke up in the morning, was pure white with spider webs as far as you can see in the picture. And this is not the first time we've heard of this kind of thing, but it literally happens typically overnight, very, very quickly. And no one's quite sure what causes the spiders all of a sudden to say, we're going to do it right here. But a field of spider webs. I mean, it literally looks like you're walking through cotton.
And you have a picture of a dog that actually is going underneath it.
A small dog walking through it and, almost has a puzzled look on his face, like, how did I get into this mess?
Right.
One of my favorite stories in the book, Donna, is right on the very next page, Buried Alive.
Ah.
A gentleman survives for 2 months in northern Sweden, stuck inside a car. He has a little bit of food when he first starts, but runs out, relatively quickly, and survives for 44 days eating snow. Temperatures as low as 30 degrees below. I kind of like survival stories, just the human spirit to get through. The odds of this guy living were a million to one at least.
Absolutely. Human beings have done so many incredible things throughout history. But on your page 42, you have a cliff corridor, and you show the external aspect of the cliff corridor, and you show the internal aspect of this cliff corridor. And we're going to be traveling to the Henan province in China. And when you look at the photo where the picture, it looks like just a little itsy-bitsy road. However, 14 villagers, that's all it was, 14 villagers with chisels and hammers achieved this architectural, and I'll use that word, architectural, structural accomplishment from solid rock.
This no electricity is, or heavy machinery. They,
right.
they dug
I mean,
this with chisels and hammers. The tunnel is 16 feet high by 13 feet wide. It's 4,100 feet long, and it's up off the ground 360 feet. This is literally a perilous road on the side of a mountain. I can't imagine driving it, never mind working on it, digging it out of the rock. I mean, it's just like it's a spooky road, that's for sure.
Not only that, but they went through
5 years in the building.
Drill rods and 4,000 hammers. I mean,
yeah.
Hardware stores here in the United States would have been delighted with that kind of an order. 10 tons, drill rods.
Well, I've spent some time in both India and China, and it's amazing what is still done by hand, very precariously sometimes. And, you know, when labor's cheap, you just add people to it. Seems to be the success. And I've been to the Henan province. I have not seen this particular road. But this is an area that makes scaffolding out of bamboo, and you look at these things, and you wouldn't be caught dead trying to climb up, you know, 5-6 stories high on it.
Amazing.
You know, held together with string and just as fragile as can be. But that's the working conditions they use, and they make the best of it.
Let's talk about
again,
some modern.
You know, good story of human endurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible. And speaking of human endurance, there's always somebody out there that's wanting to be a thrill seeker. And you have a section on sports. And when I came across the Dolphin Jetpack, I'd never heard of it. When I saw the photos about this, I said, well, they took a concept of when was it, back in the 60s or 70s, there was somebody that was flying through the air because of the engine packs that they had on their back. This is on page 97, but there is actually a ski champion. His name is Frankie Zapata. He's French. What a name. I mean, he's got a, you know, Mexican name that we know in history, Zapata. But the flyboard, this was his invention. Tell us about this, because these photographs are just amazing, and this is a brand new sport.
Brand new sport, and I'm glad you brought this one up. 18 different places in the book have a bright green and red and yellow logo that says Odd Scan, and this is one of those 18. Free app, Ripley's Believe It or Not app that anybody can download to their phone or their iPad. Scan this logo wherever it appears in the book and get hidden content. And as you said, there's three photos here in the book, but if you download the Odd Scan on this one, you'll see video as well as a couple more photos. And this thing is kind of cool. I don't know if I'd be brave enough to do what he's doing on it, but I'd certainly like to try it. It looks very futuristic, Flash Gordon or something, but he literally is going across the water, and the water pressure shoots him up into the air, and he does, you know, somersaults and curls, and, you know, he's flying. His elevation is up to 50 feet, which is substantial. But his mobility, I mean, he can turn on a dime, he can go upside down, whatever. It looks like real fun when you see the video on the app.
I wonder who his insurance carrier is, because just looking at those photographs, I'd go, oh, my goodness, the liability on this. Of course, that's just Western thinking here.
It'd certainly be an issue. Now, I thought you might have been leading towards a gentleman, I believe his name is Felix Bumbauer. I had it in my hand there a second ago that made the descent from the highest elevation ever. And what, you know, when you talk about a daredevil, this guy literally jumped off into space and reached phenomenal speeds. Most people saw it. It was sponsored by Red Bull, and it was well documented on TV and on the web. But again, we've got the Odd Scan feature on it, and when you look at it, the first thing that comes to my mind is the guy's crazy. But I tell you, in terms of an adrenaline rush, in terms of daredevil, he's my new hero.
No kidding, especially with the high risk of avalanche that could be incurred, you know, from just flipping around in these environments of high snow and ice. And it's just amazing stories about people doing incredible things. And what's so nice is that you've got the comfort of home. You can look at all of this stuff and say, gee, they're really loonier than a loony bird. And it's great because you can enjoy it, but you don't have to do it. I just could not believe some of, and that's why Ripley's Believe It or Not is just so apropos. But when on page 114, I read where a 52-year-old woman, Margaret Dahlman, was operated on by surgeons, and they removed 78 pieces of cutlery from her stomach. Now, to me, that I was like, oh, no. That is just a gross exaggeration. 78 pieces of cutlery, and yet the cutlery is laid out. There
you
are
the picture of it.
And I'm wondering, she must have had a mineral deficiency of some kind, but 78 pieces
of cutlery. Well, it's a very rare disease, but it's called PICA, P-I-C-A. And usually, you know, it's people eating metal, but it can be other objects as well. But it's a disease that you swallow things that you shouldn't swallow. And there's a museum in Philadelphia called the Mutter, M-U-T-T-E-R, with the accent on the U, that has a whole gallery display of the odd things that doctors have found inside people. And that may have changed since I was there, but the first time I was there, it was all displayed in filing cabinets, you know, in a drawer full of jewelry, a drawer full of needles and pins, a drawer full of coins. And there are records of people eating or swallowing, not eating, I guess, but swallowing hundreds of items. That's 78, believe it or not, is not a record.
Are you serious? That's not a record?
Yeah. I'm serious. This item is, you know, unbelievable, but the main reason it got chosen because there was a neat photo to go with it. But there is historical documents of people eating considerably more than that.
Wow. You've got stories about people like a woman, Julianne Kopeck, who in 1971, the plane she was flying in was, well, she had a horrible, horrible situation where her plane was struck by lightning. It crashed in the Peruvian rainforest. She was shot out. She was strapped into her seat. She was the only survivor among 92 passengers, and she had tremendous injuries, yet she trekked for 9 days to find help. You know, these are stories of the human spirit and just the passion for life, and there's so much.
Yeah, that story you were just telling is on page 115 under a list of items called Great Escapes, and every one of them is pretty amazing. My favorite is the one that is pictured, El Fusilado, and the picture is an archival picture, shows Robert Ripley with El Fusilado, which means the executed one. His name, real name was Wenceslao. But this is a gentleman that was shot 8 times, including a coup de grace, immediately the gun, you know, barrel put right on his cheek. Disfigured, but alive. The shooting, what's the word I'm looking for? The whole bunch of soldiers lined up to shoot him. Him and others, and he was left for dead. They assumed everybody had several bullets in them, they were dead. He recovers. Robert Ripley found him in the Yucatan Peninsula in 1937, brought him to his auditorium in Cleveland, and had him appear publicly to talk about his story and show his wounds, and actually even appeared on a Robert Ripley radio show. So that's what the picture is when Ripley had him on radio in 1937. Fascinating story of survival.
Absolutely. So much more in this book. And if you are looking for a gift to give to someone that has everything, the holidays are going to be here before we know it. By golly, check out ripleysbooks.com. And there is so much fascinating information. I think this is a great item to bring into a kid's life to show them the diversification in life, the uniqueness of whatever happens on this planet. And so much of it is, you wonder, is it really possible for this to be? Yes. Yes, it is.
Typically, most of the stories are single paragraphs, so it's an easy read for all ages, and it's divided into chapters, so if there's a subject matter you don't like, skip the chapter. I guarantee there's something for everybody in it, all ages, and as you said, it does make a great gift book.
Yes, and the site is ripleybooks.com. Wow, Edward, this has been so much fun. Thanks for being with me again, and happy travels, and I look forward to the next one. There's just so much that goes on in this world that we have no clue about, but by golly, Ripley's really brings it to the forefront. And congratulations on the new aquarium in Canada, and wow, well, we just have to see what other goodies you come up with.
I look forward to talking again, Donna.
Take care, Edward. Edward Meyer. This has been Donna Siebel talking with Edward Meyer of Ripley's. Believe it or not, Dare to Look is the name of the book. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call in if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener and you're wondering what's going to happen, well, all you need to do is call in, give me your first name or initial, let me give you my intuitive perceptions, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that might be important to you. So again, 888-627-6008. I wanted to share with you about my guests that are going to be coming up this week. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Kuwana Halsey. Everything I needed to know, I learned from my six-month-old, and a lot of wisdom for a young woman, and she puts it together in a delightful format. Laura Starr is going to be with us, the frugal foodie. That's right. We're going to be talking about how you can make your dollar stretch in wonderful ways. And then Don Oscar Miro Quesada. We are going to be talking with him, Lessons in Courage. Now, he is a shaman, and we are going to be discussing some points of wisdom and information that I think you'll find intriguing. Now, we are going to, because we've got a new system here on BBS, we are going to be bringing information to you, and you will be able, within a short period of time, if you miss a show, you're going to be able to download it later and be able to hear about it. We're also going to be having more show information on display for you here at the station. So all of this and more, including my newsletter that went out with guest listings, and my goodness, there's just so much going on here. I'm just amazed. If it weren't for the miracles of technology that we have today, I don't think we'd be able to do half of what we do, including having a chance to chat with you. Lauren DeStefano put together this statement, and I agree with it. This is what she said. Fall has always been my favorite season, the time when everything bursts with its last beauty as if nature had been saving up all year for the grand finale. Oh, that's so true. We have trees here in the Pacific Northwest that, yes, they're starting to drop leaves already, and we've had ferocious storms. But we'll be driving along a road in our neighborhood, and here is this tree that's a good 75-plus feet tall that has foliage on it that's brilliant, vermilion and gold, and it's breathtaking. It just absolutely is so alive with this vibrant color. I think her statement of the grand finale before our severe cold starts coming in. We've been getting hit with a lot of storms here in the Pacific Northwest. And in fact, we even had a tornado touch down in western Washington, which is exceedingly rare on a scale of 1 to 5. It was a 1, 5 being max, but it did a little bit of damage at a manufacturing plant in western Washington. But we don't have those things. We just don't. But they have been occurring every once in a while. So it just goes to show Mother Nature likes to be sure that we stay aware of the fact that you can't always predict what she's going to do. Okay, so again, give me a buzz today if you'd like, 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a story that I came across, and this is an event that occurred on a Friday evening in May of 2010. Don't underestimate grandmas and grandpas. Just don't do it, because you may think they're doddering old people, but they may surprise you. There's a couple, Oliver and Ione Cleven. They heard somebody shouting out on their front lawn. And Ione is in her middle 60s, and she steps out onto her front porch, and this is what she sees. She sees two men. They're dressed in dark clothing, and they're struggling with something on her lawn. And she wasn't too happy about this, because she and her grandson had, just the weekend before, put in a brand new flower garden. And she got mad. She just told him, get off. Go fight somewhere else. So she just was not going to have her yard messed up. However, when she shouted, what these two big men were struggling with, she realized was a young boy. He was a young teenager. He looked up because he had put himself into a ball. When he heard her cry out for them to get off the lawn, he looked up at her, and there was enough light where she could see his face. And the boy said, they're trying to kill me. Well, by golly, she ran out on the lawn and went towards these two big guys, reached down without any thought to her safety, found the boy's arm, the young boy's arm, and pulled him out. That's right. And she just got mad. You leave him alone. Well, the men stood up, and they were stunned, because this is the last thing that they expected. And she noticed one of them was carrying a very sharp object, and it was a knife. And then the boy wasn't standing up straight. He was in pain, and the two men, within just a very short period of time, just said, we got an old lady here. Forget it. Well, Ione's husband, in the meantime, had come out, and he was a former Marine, and he just yelled out, get lost. Well, the two big guys, once her husband came out, took off. And the boy said, I've got to get to the hospital. And he lifted his shirt, and he had been cut open by these attackers. His intestines were hanging out. And the husband grabbed the boy. Ione got her keys, and she said, you call him, call 911. I'm going to go after him. Now, here's her husband, cell phone, calling 911. Ione, is going in the car chasing these dudes. Well, she have not been able to get the license number on it. And to date, the men haven't been caught. But the boy was on a stretcher when she got back to the house, and they found out what happened to this young man. This young teenage boy had been waiting for his parents to pick him up from his high school, which was across the street from this couple's home. And these two big thugs approached him, wanted his wallet, and he wasn't going to hand it over, so they started punching him. And then one of them stabbed him in his back and his stomach with a sharp hook. And when Ione stepped in, they were probably going to kill the kid. And this senior couple saved this boy's life. And people said, at your age, why did you even do this? Can you imagine? But they took active action and saved a boy's life. I just thought I'd mention that story because I think it's important for us to know that action to stop something that is not such a good thing going on. And she responded. Ione said, you're not going to do this. Not in my space. One day, they are going to find the attackers. They're going to find out about it. But at this time, they don't know who they are. Just a little bit of trivia there for you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Here in the state of Washington, apples are really big. It's one of our primary agricultural crops that travels around the world. And I have a recipe here for apple-stuffed pork chops. It is absolutely delicious. It is made with sweet potato and sage stuffing. And this is a win-win. This really is a delicious way to fix pork. So I wanted to share the recipe with you. But before I do that, so have a pad of paper and a pen handy because, wow, this is a taste pleaser. What I wanted to do was share another little bit of information about how coaches, well, how they work with kids, because a coach has a tremendous impact on young people. And I had to chuckle when I found out that a coach said when he's working with young people, he always has to keep in mind that whatever he says might be recorded. After all, we do live in a world where people have cameras and the apparatus to record anything and everything that you say. And so he says he always talks as if he has a camera on him at all times. And this coach also said that one of the challenges he has as a coach in working with kids today, because we have so many distractions, it's very hard to keep young people focused. It's not an easy thing. He has had players who were text messaging in the locker room before the game, which is an absolute no-no. And this coach said he had to literally kick a player off a team because he was going on to the games wearing a cell phone in his sock. So coaches and teachers are having to deal with certain things today that their previous colleagues in previous generations did not have to deal with. Focus, concentration, and discipline. FCD. They are something that always is going to have to be passed along and taught. And with, again, so many distractions today, my goodness, as an adult, I think of all the distractions I have, it's so easy to not get things done because you got this coming up, that coming up, the other coming up. And when you're in business for yourself, too, that is always something you have to deal with. So setting priorities and keeping your focus is a good thing, whether you're in school, as these young kids that work with this coach are, or whether you are a senior citizen. Focus. Focus, focus. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment. And again, if you want to give me a call, 888-627-6008. Oh, by the way, quickly, before we go to break, if you like to have a hiding place for your keys, there is something that I was given in the way of a suggestion. Now, I've never been one to hide a key outside the house. However, someone came up with a concept, and they said, put a spare key, tape it inside of a wind chime, and hang it near the front door. And this is why they said it was a good idea. The metallic key will be camouflaged by the metal noisemakers, and even if someone is smart enough to figure out that you've got a key there, they'll have to create a lot of noise to get to the key. I really wonder. So, just a thought. I still wouldn't hide a key outside. That's my bias. Donna Siebel here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. I've got a fascinating story about a unique phenomena that occurred in Philadelphia. And I will share that with you in just a moment. But what I wanted to do was give you this recipe for pork chops that I just think is awesome. It is a great way to use the delicious fruit, the apple, and to be able, well, I don't know, they just smell so good. This is really a wonderful way for a fall dish to just capture your taste buds. And it's real simple. You're just going to need one large slice of multi-grain bread, just one large slice, about 1.5 ounce worth. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of butter, 3/4 cup of diced sweet potato. I use the can. I don't have time to fiddle around with cooking or boiling or whatever. You may want to do it, but I just use the can. 4 scallions. You want to chop those up. You're going to need 2 gala apples, cored and diced, which will come to about 3 cups. You're going to need 3/4 cup of apple cider, 1 teaspoon of chopped fresh sage, 3/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of pepper, and then 6 nice pork loin rib chops, 1 inch thick. That's going to be about 3 pounds. So we are looking at serving for 6 here. And I'd say if you want to half the recipe, so you only have 3, then you can do that too. 2 teaspoons of olive oil and 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard. Now, you're going to need to preheat your oven to 350 degrees. And what you want to do is use a food processor, or you can use your fingers even, and you want to pulse your bread or crumble your bread until fine crumbs are formed, and you put it to the side. Then in a large skillet, you're going to take 1 tablespoon of the butter, and you put in your cooked sweet potato and 1/4 cup of scallions, and you cook them until they're just softened. And, of course, if you're using canned sweet potatoes, they're already cooked. You don't even have to do that. So the process is a little bit faster. You're just warming them up, basically. If you're using the raw along with the scallions, it's going to take you about 5 minutes. So while this is going on, then after 5 minutes of cooking, you're adding 1/2 of the diced apple, 1/4 cup of your cider, your sage, and a quarter of a teaspoon of salt. And then over high heat, you bring it to a boil, and you reduce your heat to low, and you cover and simmer it for 5 minutes. Now, again, if you've pre-cooked or if you use canned sweet potatoes, it's not going to take so long. Now, your apple mixture, you want transfer to a bowl. You stir in the breadcrumbs that you have crumbled, and you let it cool. Your skillet, just wipe it clean. Put your pepper and remaining half teaspoon of salt together. Put that to the side. And with a knife, you want to cut a deep pocket in the side of each of the pork chops, almost to the bone. And if you like boneless, you just need to make sure you don't cut it all the way through. So use a real sharp knife and just make a pocket in your pork loin chops. And what you do, you take and spoon then about a third of the cup of your apple mixture into each pocket, and you press the top of each chop to flatten, and then you sprinkle the chops with salt, the salt mixture. You need a large roasting pan. You spray it with cooking spray, so it's easier to clean up. And in the skillet that you've been using, you heat your oil over medium-high heat, add the chops in batches, cook them until they're brown, turning once, 2 to 3 minutes aside. Put the chops in your roasting pan, cover it with foil, bake it at 350 for 10 to 15 minutes. And then, while that's baking in the oven, you take your remaining butter, tablespoon of butter, add the remaining apple and scallions. You cook it, stirring occasionally until it starts to soften, about 3 minutes. Crease the heat to high. Stir in your remaining cider and your mustard. Bring to a boil. Stir it frequently until the apples are tender and the liquid thickens a little bit, 1 to 2 minutes. And that'll be just about the time your chops are finished. And what you do, take off the foil. You remove the chops to a warmed serving platter. Pour the sauce over it, and you're ready to go. And this really, really is delicious. And if you put the foil back over the chops and you just let them sit in a warm oven, you can be taking care of whatever else you want to have with the meal. Good salad, freshly baked or crusty bread. Oh, you're not going to go wrong with it. It's just absolutely delicious. I wanted to share this story with you about an occurrence in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It happened on September 26, 1950. There were two police officers, their names, John Collins and Joe Keenan. They were patrolling the streets in an area of Vera Boulevard and 26th Avenue when a shimmering purple object floated into the beam of their headlights. Now, this unique phenomena was about a half a block ahead of them. It came down from the sky, landed in an open field. Now, they had flashlights in their vehicle. They left the vehicle and began to check out this situation. And they found, very easily, this dome-shaped purple disc that was 6 feet in diameter, and it was composed of what looked like jello, quivering jello. Now, the high point, they said, of the dome was 1 foot thick, and the dome tapered down to a few inches at the edge, and there was like a misty glow around it when they turned their flashlights off. So it had its own illumination capacity. They immediately radioed for assistance, and there was a Sergeant Joe Cook and Patrolman James Cooper that joined them. They went over and tried to pick up the mass. However, the officers found that this mass fell apart, and the gelatinous bits that stuck to their hands evaporated, yet it left a very tacky film behind. Within 30 minutes, the entire purple gelatinous mass disappeared in front of their eyes, and the officer said they had this awareness that whatever was there, whatever had been there in front of them, was somehow alive, had an intelligence. That occurred again, September 26, 1950. Believe it or not, it's all recorded. Well, this is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. I hope you'll join me tomorrow because we always have so much wonderful information, terrific guests here on the show. And it's just a wonderful way to get tidbits of information, I think, that we can utilize in our own way. One of the biggest concerns I have is that people might want to stop learning. Don't. Look at life with eyes that are open with enthusiasm. I know there's a lot of things in the world that are not so pretty and are pretty ugly. However, there's also the other side. So where are you going to focus your attention? How about the betterment of the world, your life, and the demonstration of the finest and the best of who you really are? Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're not replaceable. There's only one of you. And I'm so glad that you took time out of your busy schedule to join me. God bless. Have a wonderful day or evening wherever you are on this beautiful planet of ours. Talk with you mañana. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.